And I'm so happy to be here. I think OA started real close to here. It's a real honor for me to be here. A little disclaimer here. Whatever I say tonight is strictly my opinion, you know what I mean? I've been in program since I was 37, and I'm 60 now, so that makes it 23 years I've been coming to this program. I've never left, and that's probably the reason I'm not in an insane asylum or something like that, you know, because it's more than physical recovery here, you know. I know I came into this program with a lot of anger and resentments that I really didn't even realize I had, because my motto before program was, don't get mad, just get even, you know. If somebody pulls something on you, you know, I've learned a better way here, and I'll talk about that. Anyhow, whatever I say is my opinion. I know that everybody works the program just a little bit different, and it's, you know, because I know I'm real good at taking inventories as long as it's not my own, you know. And I have to watch out for that, because whenever I point my finger at somebody else, there's three pointing back at me, you know. And it's usually I'm picking something out in somebody that I don't like about myself, you see. That's why the three fingers, you know. I better look at myself, because there's something there. Anyway, I come from the typical dysfunctional family. I had eight brothers and four sisters. Mother didn't have much time to spend with any child, you know what I mean? I was more or less got my love and care from an older sister, you know, and which I didn't realize at the time, but she was going through sexual abuse from my father, you know what I mean? And I don't know. What can you say, you know? I don't recall having anybody abuse me except maybe the boy down the street, you know, when I was a little, and there wasn't, you know. But I think when you see how, when you're raised in all this stuff, you know, you don't have many escapes, except that food can be an escape, because they never stopped me from eating whenever I wanted to eat, you know, as long as the food was there. But with eight brothers and four sisters, it was a free-for-all, you know what I mean? And they say I was born with a boarding house reach, you know what I mean? I could reach clear across the table even when I was a kid, you know. I could make sure I got my share. And that, you know, just, but I can remember times when, with eight brothers and four sisters, there was times when there wasn't any food in the house, and that was kind of scary too. So maybe there's a little real fear in my life about not having enough, you know what I mean? And that's, you see, fear is the thread that runs through the program, they say, you know. And I've dealt with a lot of that in program, because I have, you know, it's an abundant country, you know, and I've been to some other countries. I went to Guatemala and seen the poor, you know what I mean? You know. So, I just, pretty thankful, compulsive overeater, who was kind of steered into this program via Al-Anon, you know what I mean? Because there was a lot of drugs and dysfunction going on in my family. But the whole thing in the family was, when I was raised, was, let's not discuss family business with outsiders. Well, everybody on the block knew there was trouble going on in the house, you know. It wasn't really a secret, but let's just not talk about the elephant in the living room, you know what I mean? And the big trade-off was, if I don't talk about your drugs or your alcohol, then we won't talk about you being fat. You see, that was the kind of the trade-off that went on, you know. It was kind of a dysfunctional thing, but never really heard the truth until I got into a 12-step program, and I was just blown away by the honesty that everybody had here, you know. I'm trying to be honest tonight, but, you know, I kind of tend to rationalize things myself, you know. It's kind of like a watermelon is only one fruit, right? You know, and carrot cake is really a vegetable, you know. That's, you know, I can go down that path if I want to. That's the beauty of sponsors, though, because when they say something like bullshit, you know that, you know, you have to look at it a little more honest, I think, you know what I mean? And I believe this program is a mental, physical, spiritual disease, but the cure is spiritual. You know, and I used to come into program, I told somebody when I was about a year in program, I don't know how this program works. And they said, well, there's a chapter in the big book to how it works. Why don't you read it? You know what I mean? So I did, you know, and I made my acquaintance, you know. I hear all these people getting up and doing all these wonderful pitches and everything. And I said, God, what's their secret? What's their secret? And every meeting I ever went to, they read the 12 steps, you see. It wasn't a secret. They were trying to tell me something, but, you know, I'm pretty defiant, you know, and it takes a while for it to register, you know. But I'm still here after 23 years in program, so, and I thank God I never left, because I'd be 500 pounds, you know. I am way over 100 pounder. But the thing is, this program is not even, I think, this is my opinion, you know, I know there's a lot of controversy, but I think this program is not about weight. I think it's about becoming a better person. That's the whole idea behind the steps, you see. Because it's not even about the food. The food is what we do to cover up our feelings, try to escape, you know what I mean? And there's other things you can escape with, drugs and sex and a whole list of other things, you know. And I've had my problems with that, working the steps, because, you know, I was pretty able to admit that I'm powerless over food when I came in, you know. And I mean, right away I said I was a compulsive overeater, and, you know, and I can kind of believe in God, but that third step gave me a little trouble, because I said, well, okay, I'm here, I'll just turn my food over. But that's not what the step says. It says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, you see. Now, I just said, okay, God, you can have the food, I'll give it away, but as far as sex goes, let me handle that, you know what I mean? As far as money goes, you know, just give me the money, because the bottom line is more. That's what I want, more. I'm a compulsive person, I want more. You know, just, I want to be able to eat anything I want to eat and wake up in the morning at goal weight, whatever that is, birth weight maybe, I don't know. The thing is, the most reassuring thing to me is when she was reading the How It Works, is that we are not saints. And I don't even think I want to be a saint, because, you know, you have to be dead to be a saint. And I still have a little more living to do, you know. And they don't canonize you until long after you're dead, usually. So let me live a few more years before you... Not that I'll ever be canonized. The point is that I can grow spiritually, you know what I mean? And that's what the steps are. You know, the steps are, you know, the whole point is to get to that 12th step. I almost said 13th, but you know, let's not talk about that. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these other steps, we carry this message, you know what I mean? And it's based on Alcoholics Anonymous. One person getting sober, helping another person getting sober, and so on and so forth. That's the basis as a result of working this program, you see. And that's the miracle here, you see. The miracle is, you know, it says in the big book, you know, maybe I should just read this to you. Because the 10th step promises, I'm sure everybody, all the old-timers know that anyhow. But the whole idea is that when you work this program, you're relieved of the obsession, you know what I mean? And it says here, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in food. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We will react sanely and normally, and we will find this has happened automatically. Well, it doesn't happen automatically, you know, it'll say that here. We see that our new attitude toward food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in a fit spiritual condition, you see. And that's what the steps are for, you know. You go through the steps, and, you know, 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps, you know. And that's, you know, you're supposed to go through those steps once, and I, you know, but you're going to be continuing taking inventory. You know, you should do it daily. I'm not perfect. I don't do it daily either, but because I want you to know that sometimes I have a resentment and I don't even know it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like I had an operation a few years back on my ankle. You know, I had my ankle fused because of arthritis. You know, so I'm getting old. I'm a senior citizen now. And, there's only two good things about being a senior citizen. One is you get a lot of discounts, and the other is I can't remember what happened to the movie, so I get to watch it again, you know. And I'm watching it. I know I've seen the movie, but I can't remember what happened, so it's like a brand new At any rate, the whole idea is that I think I lost my train of thought now. What was that? Oh, no, before that, you know. Oh, yeah, that resentment. I was getting on the resentments, yeah. It says in the big book that resentments are the number one offender, you know. They cause more people to go out and eat. And that's because usually if you have a resentment, you're in bondage to somebody. But, see, I had this resentment against the doctor because I did everything I was supposed to do for this operation. I followed it perfectly, did everything, and then the operation didn't work, you know. So it's like instant depression. But I, you know, and the VA did the operation, you know. And I was in the casting room, and they put the x-rays up, and the doctor says, oh, no, this didn't take. We're going to have to do it again. And I, like, I was instant, and I was going like, oh, my God, the pain. And I was complaining to this guy who was on a gurney, you know, right next to me, and saying, oh, the pain in my leg. And he said something kind of funny to me. He said, wish I could feel pain in my legs. You know, it was kind of a God shot, you know. Because he, if anybody knows World War II, the last, one of the last islands they conquered was Okinawa. And he got a bullet in his spine in Okinawa. And he'd been paralyzed for the last 50 years. And here I am complaining to him about a little pain in my leg. He'd been paralyzed. You know, I felt ridiculous when I thought about it, but I think it was kind of like God telling me, hey, you know. But, see, I didn't realize I had this resentment. So finally I had to start praying for the doctor. And he did the operation again, and the second time it was a success. You know, I haven't had any trouble with the leg, you know. But, and I don't know why those things happen, but I know I didn't have to compulsively overeat about it. But I was, you know, I was really about to because of the, but, because all my, see, my resentments, they're justifiable. The trouble with justifiable resentments are they cause you to eat just as much as the unjustifiable ones. So there's a solution in the big book, you know, and it's in the story, Freedom from Bondage, and I just love that story because this woman had gone through all the steps, and she got to a point where she had one resentment left that she tried everything and it wouldn't work, you know. So she was praying to God and saying, God, I got this resentment against my mother, you know, it would be mother or father. Or some is mother, some is father, I don't know. Anyhow, my kids is my father. And and she said, I don't know what to do. And then about that point, she, you know, after her prayer, she seen this article in the newspaper, and it was about how to get rid of a resentment. It was written by a clergyman, and it went something like, if you have a resentment and you want to be free of it, what you have to do is you have to pray for that person every day for 2 weeks. You have to pray for them to have everything you would like to have for yourself. And then it said something like, even if it's only words, and sometimes it is for me, even if it's only words and you don't mean it, do it anyhow and do it every day for 2 weeks. And you'll be free is what it says. You'll be free because if you have a resentment against somebody, you're in bondage to that person, you know. And that's what this whole program is about. It says in the big book, we are sure that God wants us to be happy, joyous and free. You know, so we want to be free of the resentments, because in it, you know, and if you have a good abstinence, it's pretty easy to stay out of resentments too, because I just notice how much nicer people are when I have a good abstinence. You know what I mean? Because people are really nice. When my abstinence is kind of shitty, I just kind of like, they start running me off the freeway, and because that's where my real test is, and I get in the car. You know, but I stayed pretty calm all the way down. I live in Altadena, so was it. You know, and I hit a little traffic, but not as much as I, you know. I'm just glad I made it in time. I thought I'd left in plenty of time, but here I am. Anyhow, the whole point about the program is we want to get past, you know, I don't know if any of you know about the 132 Club. Betsy, do you know about the 132 Club? Anybody know about the 132 Club? Well, it's page 132 in the big book, you know what I mean? Does anybody know that one? Maybe I should read that too. The 132 Club is really great, you know, because, well, I can kind of paraphrase it, but I think it's better if I maybe just read it. The 132 Club is, you know, because this is a serious disease and everything. We have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things, you know, but we have been dealing with food in its worst aspect, you know. That's the compulsion. But it says, but we are not a glum lot, you know. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it, you know, which, by the way, reminds me that Overeaters Anonymous is not for people who need it, but for people who want it. You see, you really have to want this to get the benefit, you know. Because there's a lot of people out there that could benefit from it, they don't want it, you know. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We try not to indulge in the cynicism over the state of the nations, nor did we carry the world's troubles on our shoulder. When we see a man shrinking into the mire that is alcohol, our food, we give him first aid. See, and this is the reason for telling your story, you know. We do recount and almost relieve the horrors of our past, but those of us who have tried to shoulder the entire burden and trouble of others find that we are soon overcome by it. So the whole idea is you relate the story not to get pity, you know. Pity, you know. It's like, just to tell you that I'm a garden variety compulsive overeater, and I'm here for recovery, and I just happen to have the honor of, it's good for me to get up and speak. In fact, my sponsor won't let me do otherwise. He says, if you're asked, you've got to do it. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over seemingly tragic experiences of our past. And I've heard a lot of laughter in OA. And if you go to a meeting where there's a lot of laughter, there's a lot of recovery. Because that's one of the clues for recovery for me, is when I hear people laughing, you know what I mean? And I'm always, you know, like when I... See, I can even laugh at myself, which I couldn't do before, but that, I figure that's recovery. You know, when I can laugh at myself, you know, it's not as serious, you know what I mean? I said, well, okay, God, you know, it's a big deal, you know. Because, you see, the mistakes are not sins. We all make mistakes, but that doesn't mean you're a bad person, you see, and I hear these voices from my childhood. Everybody knows that those in bad health and those who seldom play do not laugh much. So let each family play together or separately, you see. And that's a mistake I used to make. Well, let's go to the movies. I don't know if he wants to go to the movies with me, so I won't go. You know, well, what is it that is causing me not to go? Fear of being alone, fear, you know, there's some kind of fear that stopped me so many times in my life from doing something I wanted to do. You know, it's, you know, so. So. It says, play together or separately as much as your circumstances warrant. That means you should be playing half the time anyhow. The other half is work. I'm sure you can't play all the time. but we are sure that God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We cannot subscribe to the belief that this life is a veil of tears, though it was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. Oh, God, that kind of hits me right between the eyes. Huh? If I'm miserable, who did it? Who did it? It says here, it says, God didn't do it. Who made me miserable? It's kind of like Abraham Lincoln says, you know, most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Who's making me miserable? Is it something I'm doing? Avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence. In other words, let little God power show in, you see. And that's the 132 club, you know. We don't have to be a glum lot. We can be happy, joyous, and free. Okay. There's a few things that I wish I'd done a little better when I was taking my steps. You know, one is I had a resentment, you know, against this guy at work, you know what I mean? And I was doing my inventory, and it came time to make amends. He had popped up on my amends list, you know what I mean? And, you know, I lost contact with this guy. I don't know where he's at. There's no way I'm going to make any amends to him. I wish I would have done it. You know, it says do it promptly. And I said, yes, you do that promptly, because here's what happened to me, you know. Every time I still think of that guy, I go, ooh, you know. If I would have cleared up, you know, if I would have gone and made demands when I was supposed to, I wouldn't have that little ooh anymore, I don't think. You know, I would have cleaned up the wreckage of my past, you see. Because it's like it says in the big books, if we come out of the storm cellar and everything's a mess, you know what I mean? And we got clarity and the storm has passed, but isn't it great that the wind stopped blowing? You know, and there's a big wreckage in our life, you know what I mean? And everything's kind of destroyed, you know. But and the storm has stopped, but there's, you know, we got cleanup to do, you know, cleanup to do. The other thing I like to do is I bite, you know, I've learned in program to maybe bite my tongue a little more. Because sometimes I want to say something and I have, you know, because I don't like to make amends, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I try to stay out of the wreckage of my future, is what I call it, you know. The wreckage. And how do you do that? You're simply doing it by taking it one day at a time, you know, and not getting into the future so much. I'm not saying you can't plan for the future. I think it's necessary to plan, you know. If I hadn't planned for being here, I wouldn't be here probably. But it doesn't always go the way you plan it, you know what I mean? And for some of us, that's very hard, you know. Especially if you're like me and Al-Anon too, you know, because I have to work this program for myself. I can't work it for anybody else. So, I think sponsorship is very necessary, you know, to keep that clarity, you know what I mean? Now, I'm not saying that you have to share every deep, dark secret you have with everybody in program. That's not the whole idea of it. But you should have at least one person that you can, that knows you, and you can, you know, to keep you out of that, what I call rational lies, you know. They sound rational, but they're lies, you see. Rational lies, you get it? They, you know, they sound real rational to me anyhow. And, but I have to, because that's what I do if I isolate and try to figure out the problem myself, you know, is that it's like, yeah. And so. Okay. I didn't know they were going to have music. Ice cream in here. Yeah. Oh, I can. It wasn't the ice cream man for me. It was the Helms Bakery with the big long drawers and the cream puffs. The cream puffs. And I used to sneak that little H in the window when Mom wasn't looking. You know what I mean? Make sure it stopped. You know what I mean? I don't know. This is probably predating some people in here. You know, they don't know about the Helms truck. There's a bakery truck that used to make. Yeah, yeah. The helm struck, yeah. Cream puffs, yeah. I was like Rags the Tiger, yeah. Cream puffs. At any rate, I guess my abstinence is, you know, I've been in the sugar and out of the sugar, and currently I got about 5 years from the sugar, and this time I kind of gave up white flour too, you know what I mean? And when I first came in the program, they told me, you know, just because I was still working and I was a truck driver, you know, and I was driving all over the country, so I worked out. I just had to eat the best I could wherever I was at, because there was no way I could cook or, you know, because I was on the road half the time, and so I'd eat somewhat absently in restaurants and greasy truck stops and stuff like that, but I was working hard, and I could eat a lot back then, you know what I mean? I could actually eat with reckless abandon, you know, because what I was a mover, you know what I mean, when I came into programming. I was always the guy that packed the kitchen, you know what I mean? Because, you know, and I needed to make amends for that, but I don't know where the customers are anymore, you know what I mean? Because I find all their stash in the kitchen, you know what I mean? And you know, so the whole time I was cooking, and I'd be eating the cookies and the chocolate and all that, and then they'd say, well, time to go to lunch. So I'd go eat lunch and then come back and pack some more, you know what I mean? And that was a perfect job for a compulsive overeater, but it was also that I was getting lots of exercise so I could burn all that the calories off, and see. Now, I still have somewhat that same appetite, but I'm not doing it anymore, and it shows, you know what I mean? So I've had to, and now I'm getting up to where I really have to watch what I eat, you know what I mean? It's like it's not working, you know, so. But although I've been losing the last few months, I kind of hit a plateau, you know. I lost about 15 pounds, but, you know, and it was just from being careless, you know what I mean, more than anything. But I think it's more of just not being in that fit spiritual condition, you know, because the food doesn't get me unless, so I need, you know, I need to pray more, you know what I mean. Not that I'm going to be on my knees all the time, but I do, I think. Because see, when I came into program, I was doing contract trucking back in 1984, you know, and I was making like $60,000 a year then. And then my back went out on me, you know. Then I was making zero for, I don't know how I did it, except that I did it one day at a time, you know. Because, you know, in the promises it says, it doesn't say economic insecurity is going to leave you. It just says the fear of economic insecurity is going to leave you. I was always, you know, I wasn't afraid of it, but I was economically insecure. But what I realized is that when I'd been doing all that trucking, I'd bought some real estate, you know what I mean? And it was kind of like, wasn't paying for itself, but about the same time my back went out on me, you know, and I was making nothing. Interest rates dropped, and I refinanced everything. I was able to refinance everything and save myself about $500 a month, you know, on the refinancing. And then I upped the rents a little and back then, and, God, you know, it's hard to believe that, and I don't feel like it, but that I'm a millionaire today because of those properties I bought way back then. I just held on to them, you know, and they were my income, you know. But I would have, you know, I wouldn't have that. If I wasn't in program, you know, I would have sold out a long time ago. But you know, it's just it's somewhat like being satisfied with what you got. You know what I mean? Because I went out a couple years ago and I put some money in the stock market and I lost like 90% of it. You know what I mean? And I go, but then what real estate has done in the last couple years, I didn't, you know, I'm more than made up for my losses and stuff, you know. And the only reason I bring this up is that it wasn't me that did it, you know. It was just, I just feel really blessed. I feel blessed that I don't have to panic about things in my life, you know, because of the program, see. The program is much more than just not eating, you know what I mean. It's like living life on life's terms, you know what I mean. Whatever comes, because the thing was, I didn't have a job, but I was reading in the big book, it says, we have a new employer. You know, and that employer is God. You know what I mean? That's the whole idea behind the 12 steps. It's not about, because see, job is kind of like identity. If somebody asks you, "What are you? Who are you?" I say, "Well, I'm a secretary, or I'm a mover, or, you know, that's not really who I am." You know, what I, and I can say it here. What I really am is a compulsive overeater. And the cure is here. You know, they have a cure. You work these steps to the best of your ability, and I guarantee you, you'll have recovery. You know what I mean? And it may not seem like it all the time, but you'll have it. You know, we're absolutely sure that you know, because it's worked for so many people. You know, they keep saying it works if you work it. You see, but my trouble is I'm so intelligent. You know, I know about compulsive overeating. You see, but it says self knowledge avails nothing. We turn it. We stood at the turning point. And we asked his care and protection with complete abandon, you know. Because, see, I can know all about compulsive overeating. That doesn't mean that I'm going to recover. It takes action, and action is the steps. If you don't do the steps, there's no, you know. And I think the whole point is that when they wrote this big book, there was like 100 recovered alcoholics donated to this book, and you know, and it was very young when they first wrote it, you know. But this is the way they did it, you know. And back then, they had a recovery rate much greater than the recovery rate today, you know. They had about a 50% recovery rate. If we had that here in OA, there wouldn't be room in here for all of us, you know what I mean? There wouldn't be room. So, my idea of working the program, if I really want to work a good program, do what it says in the big book, you know. And that's the way it started. If we had a 50% recovery rate, you know what I mean? And then, well, my time is just about up, so I'm going to, I don't know. I guess so. I just want to, you know, I'm really, truly grateful. I'm so grateful. I found the program because I'd probably be dead, because this is a serious disease, you know. I know I probably would have been, or I probably would have gotten a fight and killed that way, or I've been 500 pounds and died of a heart attack, or who knows, you know, because it's just not about the physical part, it's about the mental part too, because I guess I'll tell you this little story about how dangerous resentments are, because I had a brother who was a heroin addict, you know, and he found recovery, and he's the first one that, this is before I got the program, he showed me the story of Dr. Alcoholic Addict in here, which is one of my favorite stories, you know. They changed the name of the new big book that they came out with, you know, but I like Dr. Alcoholic Addict. I read it, gave me a little chill, but he was making like amends to me, and working a good program, and he was in an impact house, and he went and got a job and cleaned up, and then he got a little angry at his sponsor, you know what I mean? And they say that drugs is what killed him, but I think what it was that anger that started him on the path. That's what killed you, you know what I mean? You can't afford to hold on to anger, because you have a resentment against somebody else. It's like drinking poison yourself and expecting the other person to die. It just doesn't work. That anger affects you more than it does the other person. And that's, it seems unfair, but that's the way it is. I've been there. But, so, you know, it gets us all. Now, I don't think anybody can not help but get angry. You know what I mean? I'm not talking about anger. A resentment is when you keep visiting that anger, you know what I mean? Because anger is an emotion, you know? It just comes out sometimes, you know? I mean, it's like even Jesus chased the money changers out of the temple, you know? It's what they call justifiable anger or whatever it is. But It's when you keep it going year after year. You know, if you want to be free, you have to get rid of that. You know, I gave you the prescription. It works for me. I think it'll work for anybody that does it. Anyhow, I'm really happy that you let me be here. My time is up. Probably go on all night, but you probably don't want to hear this. Oh, I do. Oh, I was going. Oh, yeah. If you want questions, anybody want questions?
If you get a question, please repeat it.
Okay. I'm curious about what got you to your first meeting. The question was, what got me to my first meeting? Well, it was an Eskimo. you know what an Eskimo is. In the big book, they talk about that. That you're trying to stay sober, and you go up to the North Pole to stay sober, and even then, somebody will show up. An Eskimo will show up with a bottle and get you drunk. If you're just trying to avoid it, you know, you can't really avoid food. You know what I mean? But I'd gone to Al-Anon a year before, and I didn't even know about OA. And I used to go eat breakfast at this little diner every morning, and this girl, Aggie, I don't know if she's still in program, but I know she goes to AA. I think some people know Aggie. Maybe shouldn't mention her name, but she asked us, "You want to come to this meeting?" You know, because I was talking Al-Anon. I was talking to 12 steps. She just figured I was in program, so I went to this meeting, and it was about OA, and I didn't even know OA existed. And right away, I heard what I needed to hear. And that's how I got to my first meeting, you know. It's like, they didn't tell me what the meeting was about, just come to this meeting, and I trusted her and came, you know. Then they couldn't get rid of me, because you know? I was on my honeymoon then. You know?
How do you, I'm not a spoker over here, thank you. So how do you avoid situations where you're surrounded by a lot of sugar, and how do you send that off?
Sugar is a funny thing, you know what I mean? I think what Bill W. said about alcohol, you can't avoid it, you know. But you just have to ask yourself a question, you know. He's talking about going to bars and parties and stuff like that if you're an alcoholic. He says, well, what's your reason for being there, you know? If it's like a wedding or something like that, then it's okay for you to be there, you know what I mean? Because you're not going to avoid sugar, you know. But the point is that if you're working a spiritual program, it's not going to get you there. I did have trouble with sugar, and one of the old-timers, Alta, her story used to be in the old chocolate book, you know what I mean? I called her up one time, and I says, I'm having trouble with sugar. What do I do? So she told me to get the book out. I says, read the doctor's opinion. And every place it says alcohol, put sugar. You know what I mean? Go through and mark it out, put sugar, and then read it again. And amazingly, I stopped eating sugar after I read that. It just put a lot of little chill down my back to do that. You know what I mean? Just cross it out, and I just felt like a part. You know, and sugar seemed to, like, just evaporate, you know, go away. You know? And that's from one of the real old-timers. I don't even know if she's still alive anymore. I know she got Alzheimer's, and I haven't seen her for a number of years. And, you know, she's one of the first members of OA.
What did you do? How long did you take to
do? Well, I really can't put an exact date on when I was using humor. I used to use humor even when I was dysfunctional, I guess, you know, but it was kind of a rotten humor, and it's not like you hear the laughter in OA, you know what I mean? My food plan is varied, you know what I mean, because over the years in OA, because my first sponsor, he says, okay, we did that food plan, now I'm not driving truck anymore, so now I have to tighten up on this, and then he said, you're going to have to give up bread. Well, what about potato? Can I have a potato? No, you don't get a potato. Well, can I have oatmeal? He says, no, you can't have oatmeal. He says, if you want what I have, you have to do what I did to get it. You know what I mean? So you know what I did? I went and got myself a new sponsor. He said, that's how defiant I am, you know. And I can remember that I had this relationship that I had to give up one time, and boy, it just hurt. It was, oh man, it was a killer. You know, I had to give up this relationship, and it just hurt me so much, and I was so sad. And I went to the meeting and pitched about it. You know, and I went on and on about it, and then I told them the relationship was with cheese, because somebody told me that you may be allergic to dairy products, so you have to give up dairy products for a while to see if there's, you know, any difference. So, I mean, I swear, that hurt me more than any relationship with any woman I ever gave up, you know. And then I know I'm a compulsive overeater when that happens, because cheese was my lover, you know what I mean? He never talked back to me, and it always was there, and was so easy, and, you know, I mean, that's how sick I am, you know what I mean? So, I see, because food can be a good replacement for sex, you know what I mean? So, and we all have problems. That's another thing I like about the Big Book, is to do a sexual inventory, but it doesn't get into the sexual inventory. It says you have to do an inventory and find out what's right for you, you know, because there's so, you know, such a wide thing in the sexual, you know, you have to find out what's right for you, and then you should do that, you know what I mean? They like to stay out of that controversy, but I think that the words that assure me most in there is this: we all have problems with sex. We'd hardly be human if we didn't, you know what I mean? Because it's a basic instinct, you know. And if God didn't give us that instinct, we probably wouldn't be here today, you know, because procreation and everything, you know. We wouldn't be here without it. So it's not a dirty thing. It's, you know, it's necessary for procreation, but you have to find out what is right for you, you see. That's almost it about that. Okay.